put all your eggs in one Champions League basket, but the eggs start to crack. It's That So MLS with myself, Nick Thornton, and my friend Andrew Bates. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I feel like Vancouver fans had or fans of any team that has a rivalry with TFC were having a better night last night than some nights for Vancouver fans in past weeks.
Yes. Yeah, it was kind of unfortunate that they couldn't have done more with that, but we saw Toronto fall 2-1 at home to Chivas Guadalajara. They have a mountain to climb. Remarkably, I don't think there's all that much to talk about the match, really, beyond Chivas scored 2 goals and Toronto just looked a little bit flat, despite Jonathan DeZorio getting a goal, which was good. What do you think? Has Greg Vanney's gamble to put everything into the Champions League this year paid off? And do you think it's going to work? Do you think that it's feasible for Toronto to go down to Guadalajara and get the result they need to take the second leg, knowing that it's 2-1 on aggregate for Chivas with the away goals?
I think it is worth it for Toronto regardless. And the reason why is because this is the previous year was discussed as a historic MLS performance by Toronto, and regardless of what happens, it continues to be a historic performance just by dint of the defeats against or the victories against Mexican teams.
Yep.
Whether or not they can win in the second half, by surrendering their early goal and having what I'm told is a little bit of a slip up with Alex Bono, puts them into a situation where they have to win. And for once in a do or die scenario in a cup final, they're not doing it at home.
Yeah.
This was kind of, I feel like that was, if anything else, I tried to get an eye on this contest, but it was on the TSN that I do not have streaming rights to.
Mm.
It was the only one that was not displaying a Toronto Raptors playoff game. But I think that the thing is it, all the things that have worked or have almost worked for Toronto in the last two MLS Cup finals, playing at home didn't really turn the tide for them. You had the storyline of Jozy Altidore being, I guess in this case, sick instead of injured as he was in previous high-pressure game scenarios. But Jozy Altidore trying to gut through again and not really being able to do it, which is totally fine. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Don't, if you're having stomach problems, there's a second leg to this. It's fine. Can they do it in the second leg? I wouldn't say that it is entirely, it's not impossible. And you, compared to the last second leg that they did, they went in and got a 0-0 draw. And I think that you have to be a little bit more ambitious in general, but especially in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
A 2-1 win to usher in penalty kicks is a challenging but not inconceivable result, especially if Altidore is over whatever illness he has picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Of the difficulty rating is always way higher away in Mexico than it is away to other MLS teams. So
yeah, I agree with everything you said, and for those reasons, I'm not confident that they're going to be able to make it happen.
I feel like I've been very confident in their success until now, and it all just sort of hit a big. Wow, big old record scratch in this song they've been playing.
Yeah, and you know, it's unfortunate because I think, you know, not that many pieces have changed and they're still a good team, and I think they've done everything they could to try to win this. I genuinely kind of feel like they've hit their ceiling with this squad that they have. And you know, there's great promising talent. It doesn't mean that Toronto will never get better, but as for where they're at with the squad they have this season, I feel like winning MLS Cup was maybe the ceiling. And I think the test for Greg Vanney will really be, if they crash out of the final, can they use that as momentum and fuel to focus on the league and not sort of be dragging their tails between their legs back home and struggling domestically? Because up until now, we could also say the way that they've struggled in the league is because they focus so much energy on the Champions League. And they've played far fewer games, so the fact that they're bottom in the East really doesn't tell us much besides they've played a few games and put out sort of second-string lineups for some of those games.
And it's kind of like, it's funny from a competitive balance perspective because you can't even necessarily any rule, because of how few games there have been in the season, any rule that you would have put in about, like, guaranteeing a certain, you know, percentage of your players to be in a league game or whatever that were in the starting lineup, they've started not terrible players, but B players like Akeche so many times. They've played B teams so many times that it is the League A team.
Yeah.
If you had had a rule against this, if you looked at the difference between the match against Club America and the match against Colorado on the weekend, they had one player in the starting 11, Drew Moore, in common between those two games. Only three or four players in the 18 in general. They tanked that game. Colorado happily collected with the 2-0 victory. A real gimme that I've seen people ask. I wonder if other Western Conference teams are all right with this. Eastern Conference teams don't care, but like you couldn't have even. But even if you were to discuss, like, should it have been against the rules to do something like that? You couldn't have, because a lot of those players that are not in what we consider to be the classical first choice Toronto FC 11, we've only really seen that in the Champions League. We've seen it maybe once, if at all, in the league so far this year.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, I think it's definitely okay at this stage in the season when they've played so few league games is put out some untested players and get them some minutes, because even if they're tanking, Greg Vanney is also seeing parts of his squad that he only, for the most part, has seen in training and seeing them play together. So it could work out that this becomes a huge advantage later in the season when they need more depth. Vanney has had some good looks at some of his players now and some of his other options and knows what they're capable of in a game time scenario where a lot of squads are carrying 8 or 9 players that may only play 2 or 3 games, if that, throughout the season, and are basically just there to keep the reserves steady in case of emergency. But there's a lot of players that you mentioned that have now actually had considerable game time under their belts. Some of them we may not see again ever. Some of them may make it into the lineup. But on the note of that game, I was also just impressed that Colorado actually collected and seems to be building a little bit of momentum. And even though they were playing a second-string Toronto, we've seen Colorado's in the past, it didn't matter which string they were playing, they seemed to somehow capitulate. So it was nice to see them get a clean sheet and take home the 3 points. But I will say, Toronto had a lot of chances in that game as well. It didn't look clinical, but they certainly weren't, it wasn't for lack of trying.
Mm-hmm. It's like you're absolutely right about some of the players that have seen time in the league. It's like the battle bridge in Star Trek The Next Generation. You maybe only saw the set twice, but you always remember it was there.
It's exactly like that. Around the league, where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the most painful game first?
Yeah, I caught a fair chunk of Whitecaps 2-0 LAFC 2. It was frustrating because while there have been some, the Atlanta game was tough for the Whitecaps. they were also away for that, so it's kind of frustrating to see a performance like this at home.
Yeah.
And the Salt Lake game is the same. Great goals from LA. The obvious, I think the story that's being talked about the most and is the obvious story is that without Kai Kamara, it's lacking.
Yeah, which certainly seemed to be the case on Friday, but and also with Anthony Blundell out with the concussion protocol as well, they really only had Hurtado, but this is about as disappointing of a Whitecaps performance as I've seen in the sort of Carl Robinson era, is that if there was ever a time to just bunker down and boot it and run, this would have been the game to do it in. And LA did not look good for much of this game. They were giving up sloppy balls. They weren't able to really get too many crosses into the box, or they weren't trying because of the height of Aha and Kendall Waston. But part of the reason why, you know, the Carlos Vela strike is forgivable. Somebody should have stepped up and challenged, but Carlos Vela, we know, can score goals at will like that. But they just, there never seemed to be much on. And it sort of summed it up for me in about the 70th minute, the Curva Collective, the supporters group I sit in, started singing, "Get a shot on goal, get a shot on goal, get a shot on goal." And that's how it,
and you're the home team.
And you're the home, and that's how it felt, is it's just like, okay, we're defending okay, but we're barely able to make it out of our own end and certainly not get a chance on frame. And then so late in the game, or earlier than Robinson usually does, he pulls Hurtado out and puts in Nicholas Mosqueda. So we're 2-0 down, and he's, when we have no strikers on the pitch. And it was just, it was one of those games where nothing really looked that good. I think that we might have had a little bit more had Breck Shea started ahead of Alphonso Davies, but now there's the whole question of there's really only one left back on the team. So if you need to pull off De Jong, who looked not good in this match, then you need Alphonso Davies on the pitch to put him back into that left back position. So it's funny how, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the depth of squad and the strength of the Whitecaps team, and this week, with only 2 injuries, all of a sudden, the team looks completely neutered and clueless.
Well, Jordan Mutch was also out, so that was that was a blow. I think that part of it just speaks to, and we've talked about this a little bit before, the lack of cohesion and the lack of familiarity among the team in its current makeup. I think following the Tim Parker trade.
Yeah. Pick a name that was there last year that isn't here this year. There does seem to be an overall lack of cohesion. There's a couple of bright spots.
It seemed like it was going so well.
Sorry?
In preseason.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was going so well in preseason.
It did, and I was really excited. And I think there's still reason to be excited. I don't think we need to quite ring the alarm just yet. But there's definitely pieces missing there. Efi Juarez, I thought, had a pretty good game overall. He was getting some good balls into the box and seemed to have a little bit more control. I think Jose Aja is a good center back. I think he's obviously finding his confidence again, but I thought he had an okay game. But it was one of those nights where nothing quite seemed to go well, and especially from the second goal on, it never looked like Vancouver was going to score a goal. And there was fans streaming out from the 80th minute onwards.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm normally right until the buzzer, no matter how bad it is, and I'll stick to the dying whistle. And once they called extra time, I was like, I'm done. Nothing's going to happen in this extra time. And if I can work my magic by leaving and having someone score a goal, I'll do it. But... It was not to be.
It was the same for me. I was sitting there watching and having people, you know, I was sitting there watching with my girlfriend, deciding whether or not I was going to stay or go, having people be like, what's up? We're at the bar. What's going on a Saturday, late on a Saturday night, as it is in Atlantic time.
Yeah.
And like at in the 80th minute, like, this isn't happening.
No. I think we can safely say, you know, never say never, but I'm saying never.
Yeah. I thought that... So I don't want to be hard on him. But the question I got to ask is Nowitzki having a tough time?
It's a good question, and I think he is. We saw this with Tim Parker, too, the sort of sophomore slump, that they come in and have a great opening rookie year, and then the second year they sort of struggle to find their form. I don't know what happened to our other right back that we signed, who has a ton of MLS experience, but since preseason we've basically not seen or heard of him. And this is a game where I kind of went, okay, you're at home and you don't want to shake it up too much, but at this point in the season you can certainly make an argument for mixing things up a little bit. And Nowitzki did look like he was struggling considerably during this match, and he still had some okay moments. I certainly don't think we should write him off, but Sean Franklin, that's him, I keep forgetting his name, you know, he's a 33-year-old right back who's had tons of experience in MLS, looked great in preseason, very serviceable. I don't know where his fitness is at or what his situation is, but it was immediately apparent as this game started how short our team was. And it wasn't just because we didn't have Kamara on the field. And that's where it was interesting to see. Like, Nowitzki's a strong right back, but Sean Franklin is a strong and, well, I guess they're about the same height, but he's got a little bit more physicality. I would like to see them mix it up a little bit. And it was interesting that, yeah, with such a lack of height, you know, not seeing much of Brekše, seeing nothing of Bernie Abini, if I'm remembering correctly, it kind of felt like they didn't really have anybody to kick the ball to.
And this is a case, and this is a long-running gripe that some people have with Carl Robinson, but the lack of an inclination to shake things up until very late in the game. Well, as we're saying, like it wasn't unclear that it wasn't happening the way that they had hoped. The first Whitecap substitution took place in the 65th, I guess 65, 70, 78. So it would have been all, by that point, it was kind of clear that the flow was not happening.
No, and I'd even say, you know, don't be afraid to pull two guys off at once. Like, if you're going to mix it up, mix it up. And even at the first sub, there was nothing on, and it was time to make a change. But credit to LAFC. They did the Bob Leonarduzzi presented Jordan Harvey with a plaque for the all-time MLS appearances by any one player. Jordan Harvey did play. He struggled, actually. But it looked okay. It was good to see him, and there was a big standing ovation when he was subbed off. Good greetings for Steven Betisher as well. So it was... The funny thing is it felt like sort of like nobody could get too upset because Jordan Harvey and Steven Betisher were on the field. Yeah, but there was just sort of this feeling of inevitability to the whole game where it was like, well, they certainly look better, and we look pretty bad, so I guess we lose this game.
I know you had been a little unsure about having such a big ceremony for an opposing player before the game. Did it? Were your concerns mitigated, or was it as distracting as you feared it might be?
I guess I don't know if I was afraid it was going to be distracting. I just thought it an odd choice. It was very short. It was interesting that they moved up the kickoff time by a half hour to accommodate this. And the whole thing was over in about 90 seconds. That literally Bob Leonarduzzi came out, welcomed Jordan Harvey back, congratulated him as being the all-time MLS appearance of the Whitecaps. Give him a plaque. They stood there motionless for 30 seconds while people took pictures, and then it was done. It was a nice gesture. I guess obviously they didn't have the opportunity to do it last season if they thought maybe there's a possibility of him coming back. It was a little strange, but I don't think it distracted. Jordan Harvey did start the match, which I believe is might have been his first start for LAFC. But I think that did help that Betasher and Harvey together, clearly they understand what the Whitecaps backline is all about and the Whitecaps mentality. And Stephen Betasher in particular had a lot of luck running down that side and whipping balls into the box kind of at will, as he is wont to do. But it was nice. Ultimately, you know, my feeling was you get attached to certain players. It was really good to see Jordan Harvey and Stephen Betasher back in BC Place. Nice to see them come by the supporters sections. There's no bad blood. Lots of respect shown both ways. To me, is kind of the ideal situation you want.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's especially for Harvey, you know. We enjoy him. I think that you're right that it's a little weird how much of a deal was made about it for how little actually occurred.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that is what you risk.
Then again, the supporter sections had their Jordan Harvey TIFOs up, so clearly it was something that the fans wanted.
Well, they also, I understand they canceled the March of the Match in order to... In order to accommodate that, which is, I think that's, you know, that's a big step.
It's notable.
As well. It's a big part. It's a big part of the pre-match preparation, so.
Yeah.
What can you say? Another match I tried to watch but had challenges for rights issues and therefore had to watch on the radio was the New York Red Bulls 3, Montreal 1 match. Continuing what Montreal is determined to barrel through as a slightly tough beginning to the year.
Yeah.
What did you think of this one?
Yeah, Montreal has struggled quite a bit. However, we know New York Red Bulls have had some shaky moments as well, but overall have looked quite good. You did very much get the sense, giving up the goal early on to, of course, none other than BWP, 5 minutes in. This is another one for me that had an air of inevitability to it. If any, you know, even though Montreal was able to draw a level in the 30th minute from a great strike from Vargas, this one just felt like New York had it kind of in their pocket the whole time. They were going to have to earn it, but... You know, when you see a team like New York scoring goals by committee, you know that they're going to have a pretty successful season. And Montreal just has really failed in any of their matches to look anything of much of a threat over a sustained period of time. And that, to me, is kind of concerning, is that, you know, the defensive errors and things like that, it's early days, those things can be worked out. But similarly to what the Whitecaps had, it just felt like they weren't really able to properly challenge. And so if you're going to play every single game with your backs against the wall, you're going to give up goals. And to me, that's about as much as I can say about this one, is Montreal doesn't look comfortable. They don't look confident. And a team like New York Red Bulls, with the personnel they have, is going to jump all over that.
Yeah, I feel like the Kaku era has started slowly in New York, but I guess they're all very pleased that has borne a little bit of fruit. Being able to have some balance with Bradley Wright Phillips is good.
Mm-hmm.
You do see some great moves, and you've seen some great moves on scoring plays from Ignacio Piatti this year. But after all of the, I know I was right there saying, you know, it's a big disaster that you haven't come back and scored this as signed this guy. But I feel bad for him because I feel like I don't hear much from him, and it's not a team that looks like it's set up to compete at the moment.
No. Yeah, I feel like they've, in many ways, they've brought him in to continue to pull the strings, but the strings aren't attached to anything. So you've got this great midfielder, this great playmaker, and we know he can score goals as well, but if there aren't people to play the ball to, and people aren't moving upfield, the overwhelming thing that I've seen from Montreal again is they just play kind of slow. They're able to move the ball around with speed, but you know, there's very few times in a Montreal game that we've seen so far this season where things really open up and you see bodies moving and trying to get on the ball and attack. And that's just so key in MLS now. Teams that can't compete with the pace of other teams pay for it dearly. And New York kind of looked like they were in second gear the whole time and could have gone faster. They just didn't really need to. So that pressure and intensity isn't there for Montreal. That to me is the ongoing concern, is what is it going to take to get Montreal to kind of wake up and play with some intensity, because they're still a good team, but if they don't turn up the dial, teams are just going to continue to walk all over them.
They have some youth, and I remember this being part of my good friend Olivier's pitch early on, is that it was going to be more of a youth-focused thing. And indeed, Jason Vargas has gotten some great time.
Mm-hmm.
Looks great. But if you look at the age of the back line, 29, 27, 36, 25, 26, that doesn't look to me like there is a significant, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm just not familiar enough with the players, but it looks like it doesn't even look like a team that is saying to hell with it, play the kids.
I agree. And which at this point I would say maybe you want to start doing is say to hell with it, just play the kids and get them some minutes and see what kind of squad you can assemble. It feels very much like a team that has not yet found their starting 11. And let's hope that this is not their best starting 11, because it could be a real long, tough season for them if this is it. You know, and in fairness, against a very good team in New York, but I'm struggling right now when I watch Montreal to think of a team in MLS that couldn't beat them fairly easily.
It's tough to judge on this type of lineup because they did try to stack up in the back to go away to play what has been one of the league's, I think, top teams so far in the season. But when you look at their lineup, absolutely, I absolutely wouldn't take Vargas off the lineup in this game.
No.
I wonder if you look at Piatti, Vargas, Jackson, Amel, and Oduro, do they have too many forwards? That are or too many just okay forwards? Like,
it's possible, yeah. I still think it's more in a way about a style of play, is that, you know, Montreal is okay in possession, but their counter is just not fast enough. And when they are moving up the pitch, when they're able to maintain possession, it's just not, it never really seems to amount to much. And the other team has an awfully long time to get back into position and to defend. So I think sometimes it's less about a talent and sometimes just about tactics and a style of play. That there's so many teams like New York and MLS that have so much speed and pace, they'll just happily wait for you to come to them. Take the ball off if you bomb it down the field and knock it into your goal. And, you know, I'd say at this point, Montreal doesn't seem to have a lot of secrets or a lot of tricks in their bag. And I feel like every team has kind of more or less beaten them the same way, is just with a little bit more focus and intensity, they've been able to do it. We talked about Colorado and Toronto already, so Bub Kiss was the result for the Canadian teams in MLS this weekend. Zero Oops. Points between the three. Womp womp.
Oops.
Chicago LA Galaxy, did you get to catch any of this match?
No, I did not.
Well, I have good news for you, sir. Kind of boring. Wasn't the most exciting match. The one thing that of note was that in stoppage time just before the half, Mr. Zlatan himself just dinks in an easy little goal, makes it 1-0. LA never really looked to do too much more than that. This really, that was one of the sort of main chances of the game. It was nice to see Chicago defend a little better than they've done, but it's, I'm sure people must be starting to wonder, for all of the forward power that Chicago has, kind of where the potential has gone for them, because things have not been going super well this season for Chicago.
I'm seeing they lined up Bastian Schweinsteiger as a central defender.
Yeah.
I also have heard, hearing people say that he did well. Like he was a, if you're going to go superstar versus superstar, he had a lot of plays. It is he had a lot of passes. I saw in a tweet. But I think that one of the things that I've been watching with LA is this tendency since Zlatan showed up to sit back until he comes onto the pitch and really only kind of get up once he starts applying the pressure. Do you think that this, what do you think the impact of starting him was? Did it help or should he have been reserved? As much as I critiqued them for it, should they have reserved him for a smaller impact role?
I think for the tactics of this game, it was probably the right call to start him. I think it was probably an easy guess to think, regardless of where they needed to play Schweinsteiger, they wanted him marking Ibrahimovic because he's played against him enough times and knows how he plays. And did, as I said, like did a pretty reasonable job of it. I mean, they won the game, so it obviously was the right call. But I think we are going to see, you know, it's a long season, and I think Zlatan will be played in lots of different types of roles throughout the season. Right now, LA's main concern is getting some points on the board and trying to make things a little bit easier for themselves so that if Zlatan can't play every game or if he gets injured, they can afford a few weeks where, you know, they can tie or maybe drop a couple of points at an away game. But while you've got a healthy, enthusiastic Zlatan, let's take it, because you never know how long that's going to last.
That makes sense. And I think that they've made great use of him. He appeared on the Jimmy Kimmel show.
Yeah.
Which you saw a little bit where the clip that I got to see was him saying that he decided, after a while of considering, he decided he was going to share his gift with MLS.
I believe it's, he
don't
was,
you feel like you received a gift?
He was going to get a gift for LA.
He's going to get a gift for
that
LA.
That gift was Zlatan. You know what? I have to admit, my opinion of Zlatan is starting to change for the better. I think that, you know, he says all of these things with a smile on his face. And in a way, I think he is kind of taking the piss out of the sports world and how people hold soccer stars at such great heights. I think he also truly believes a lot of the stuff he says about himself. But, you know, the football world needs characters, and MLS in particular needs characters. And it's clear he's having fun. He's going to score a bunch of goals. He's going to do well for LA Galaxy, and he's going to be a cocky little shit the whole time he does it. And, you know, it's Zlatan. It's not like anybody can say they're surprised.
I was pleased to see that they lined him up beside Kamar, because I wanted Ola Kamar to continue to have some time to grow as things continued.
Mm-hmm.
To your point a little earlier about Chicago, I think that the issue, and it isn't just losing David Akam, but they had a lot of different sort of combustible elements last year, to which Schweinsteiger was the catalyst.
Yes.
They were all there, and it felt like he was the straw that stirred the drink, so to speak. And although Nikolic continues to be a dangerous scorer, it doesn't seem like there are as many combustible elements this time around.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the people that are If you look at the people around him, Alan Gordon is a long-time name in this league. Dax McCarty is a long-time name in this, Tony Chani, well, we know his name.
Mm-hmm.
Those are reliable people that are around him, but it's not necessarily this sort of multi-headed approach that you saw last year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just thinking about the combustible elements metaphor, if Schweinsteiger is the match that lights the fuse, I feel like the fuse has gotten a lot longer between him and Nikolic, and especially when you're calling him back to be a central defender. I agree. Chicago has lost a little bit of quality. I would think at this point they're looking for some kind of summer move to add back a combustible element of sorts, just kind of have that extra little bit of quality. They've not been bad. They just haven't been particularly good. I would expect over the course of the season, once they're able to get Nikolic on the ball more, we'll see them climb up the table. One interesting match that, although, you know, there's a lot of 1-0s and draws this weekend, was DC United finally got on the board and stole a little victory from Columbus, who up to now has looked quite good. And Ulysses Segura, in the opening minute of the game, I think it was like barely the whistle had gone, and just a quick little passing triangle, beats him into the box, scores the goal, and then following the rest of the game, really not much else goes on except for a straight red card given out to Paul Areola, but they were still able to hang on and came away with 3 points. The standout for me of this game was David Oestead was not in goal, and they started Steve Clark. And so took a bit of a gamble there. And as much as it pains me to say this, Steve Clark played fantastically. And Columbus had multiple chances. This game could have easily been 3-1 for Columbus had it not been for the heroics of Steve Clark. And this sort of side note here, I guess if you're one of our Whitecaps fans listening, is I feel like David Oestead kind of lost his spot in this game and hasn't looked quite sharp enough throughout the opening season, even though it's been a difficult task. But Steve Clark came in and really took advantage of his opportunity and made some absolutely fantastic saves. And if you're DC, you got to feel like, okay, we've got two great goalkeepers. That's a great thing. But I imagine we're going to be seeing more of Steve Clark and seeing him start.
I saw in my day job, I have, I'm also a subscriber to the Washington Post, and I saw drift through my vision a headline that's like, did DC United goalkeeper's great performance save his job? And I looked at it, and I was like, oh man, Oestead did well. And in the lead, it said Steve Clark, and I was like, no!
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, in highlights and not in highlights, it's not. I've mentioned before that there are great bad MLS teams in history that have one great angry goalkeeper that's just harried the whole time by the fact that, has obviously is keeping things together the best they can. And though I love David Oestead, I feel like I haven't seen in the footage I've seen of him so far in this year, many moments that make me think, like, he really proved, like, he really endeared himself there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's a big concern, especially if you have a miracle performance like this from Steve Clark.
Yeah, he hasn't quite looked himself. And as you mentioned, the Oestead that we used to see who came out rushing out a goal screaming at his defenders, often looking like he was going to lose complete control of his arms, has seemed quite quiet and docile in the back line. And you know, I wonder if he's still just trying to feel out his position, but the loud, confident David Oestead that we saw in Vancouver, even during his final months here, which now we know there's contract issues, but he doesn't seem settled there, and he doesn't seem to be doing himself a lot of favors by just kind of sitting back and staying quiet.
Contrast Andre Blake, who is a goalkeeper I've talked about before,
yeah,
that is great. It's not like he's perfect every game, and it's not like, you know, even it's not like you could say that he has been putting in the league's best performances. But even in, you know, bigger losses, there's still one moment that you can look at him and be like, man, Andre Blake is fucking good.
Yeah.
We know he's good. We know Oestead is good. But I haven't seen as many of those moments out of him.
No, and it just goes to show you why soccer is a team sport, right? You're only as good as the guy next to you or the guy in front of you or the guy behind you. And, you know, for DC, they've continued to struggle. Overall, I don't think this is obviously, this is a great result for them and something to take away. And it's great to have competition for places. Ideally, this is something that maybe wakes Oestead up a little bit or pushes him to get a little bit more vocal and challenge for minutes. One sort of surprising...
Well, you made a good point about the settle...
Oh, sorry.
Just before we leave here, I just wanted to say that you made a good point about the settled part, is that if Oestead was loud or vocal, he perhaps had the empowerment to do so,
mm-hmm,
with his position as a well-loved player, and maybe in a unsettled environment, you don't feel that same freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The mighty New England, words I didn't think I'd be saying this season, who've had a fantastic start, fell just a little short to FC Dallas. But this game was kind of interesting, because it actually felt like for much of the match, New England had the better chances. And it was just a sort of unfortunate little mistake in the box in the 76th minute that gave Dallas the lead. But I still thought this was a really, really strong performance from New England. And, you know, Dallas has looked good this whole season and sort of tightened up some of the defensive problems they had last year. So they had their work cut out. But... I would say that New England still looks quite good. FC Dallas still looks pretty good, too, but still beatable. New England has had momentum, but they got an awful lot of chances on Dallas that perhaps should have been cleaned up earlier on. What did you think of this match?
New England is definitely... I think they're... these, because of past performance in the last few seasons... and the way that the opening weeks have gone, both of these teams are still teams that have a lot to prove every time they step out,
mm-hmm,
I think, because, you know, it's hard to tell. I feel like we both had somewhat negative opinions of FC Dallas in the preseason. And from week to week, it seems like they have either looked really good or completely validated it.
Mm-hmm.
New England, I think, has been a little bit more positive, and unfortunately, they didn't get the result here. Unfortunately, they didn't get the result at home. But it is nice to see a sort of an upward trend. Dallas, I'm still trying to get a read on.
I agree. Yeah, that's a much more succinct way of putting it than I was saying. Is New England still looks quite good, and it was unfortunate, and Dallas won the game and has won lots of games, or at least been unbeaten, but still kind of look like, what is this team about? And T.L. Bunbury has looked really good. And I thought last season and early this season, he struggled a little bit. But he's really sort of established himself in the first few games and is starting to look like, you know, he's going to continue to be a really big contributor for them. The last piece I'll say is that... we did actually finally hear from Lee Wynn this week about what's going on and his relationship with the coach. And he basically...
What's up with Wynn?
Wynn says, there's no problem. just going to keep doing my thing and hopefully get back in the game. And when Brad Friedel was asked about it, he said, why are we talking about Lee Wynn? We should be talking about Diego Fagundes. So,
because he's your player. Because he's your player.
It's so weird.
Because
I'm like, I feel awkward this... for everyone. And I'm almost, it's one of those things where like I almost can't watch. Or you're just like, well, this feels really weird.
Why are you asking? Because he's literally, because he's figuratively the elephant in the room. Why are you asking? Like I understand. Okay, so I understand sometimes coaches can be needled too much, especially in transfer season, about specific topics, and they'll say, oh, 80,000 questions about this guy's injury, and nobody's questioned about, you know, our great central defender. There's a great Gordon Strachan quote about this I can't quite recall. But in this case, you've got a healthy, quality player, and is your player. There's no obstacle other than apparently the minds and personalities of these two individuals. And this guy wants to say, why are we talking about Lee Wynn?
I didn't think that was going to be the thing that set you off this week, but it's a little ridiculous.
I don't know. It's just this.
It felt like a lot of words that accomplished nothing. It's like we have no more information than we had before, except now everyone just feels even more awkward about the situation. Because Lee Wynn's like, I have a good relationship with the coach. And the coach is basically like, who?
Which is actually a superpower move for Lee Wynn.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you make yourself out to be, if you in the situation take liberties, if you there's a way of looking at the situation where you think, well, I'm not getting my due and I'm never going to get my due, so who cares what I say about the coach? But that can kind of make you out to be a villain. So to be like, I come to training every day, I am nice to the gaffer, yeah, is like...
he's definitely doing some clever damage control at this point, I think, but yes. Weird. I think this is kind of my standout notable game of the weekend, despite offside goals and an awful lot of VAR, is Portland finally recorded a win and downed Minnesota 3-2.
I saw that. How did that go? They're finally on the old scoreboardski.
Well, what finally happened is that two of their best players turned up and scored some fantastic goals and just seemed to... You're like, oh, yeah, Alvis Powell. Oh, yeah, Diego Valeri. There they are. So two quick early goals from them. Somewhat canceled out later in the game by Darwin Quintero, who just recently arrived, a big record signing for... I think he's a record signing. He's a big signing for Minnesota. He looks to be a very good player. Definitely something that they're missing, knowing that they've got some key players injured for the whole season. Mm-hmm. So he certainly looked good. Then our old friend Fernando Addy got another goal. And then just a really unfortunate own goal at the end from Portland? Am I reading this right?
So,
I'm trying to refresh my memory here. Long story short, 3-2 is the final score.
Would you say that they kind of... Okay, so what was the deal with the disallowed goal here?
It was deemed to be offside in the end.
Who scored it? Or did not score it?
I believe it was Powell again?
Right.
Let me go back here. I think they had...
Fernando
Addy looked to get a goal in the 78th minute, but it was deemed offside, which did look like the right call. There was just an awful lot of back and forth with the video assistant referee in this game where the referee seemed quite unsure of things that he actually called right the first time. But there you go. But it's great to see Minnesota still scoring goals and looking much better than they did last season, sort of picking up where they left off. And obviously good for Portland to finally record a win and look like the Portland that we've seen play so many times. Still a little bit shaky, but this one I think probably made a lot of Portland Timbers fans feel a little bit more comfortable of like, okay, my team has not totally flopped overnight. They're just having a slow start to the season.
Well, this is my question for you, I guess. It looked like there was bar-wise, there was another disallowed goal for Minnesota as well. So it evened itself out.
Yeah.
The question that I had was, does this represent, as you said, the Portland of old, or with the idea that you're holding a 2-0 lead and you concede a goal and then you also concede an own goal with 10 minutes left to go, was it kind of like tumbling over the finish line and ass over tea kettle or what?
A little bit. It wasn't pretty, but I don't think too many people are going to complain that they finally got on the board.
You cross the line, you realize you win the race, you are on your back, but you're like, hey!
We did it. And you know what the nice thing was is that was very much the sense you got from the way they celebrated the goals and the win, is they're just like, oh, whatever, you know, a goal is a goal. two games that I'm going to sort of skip over a little bit, unless you have something remarkably insightful to say about them, is San Jose-Houston. Looked to play a very San Jose-Houston match where they traded goals back and forth and both escaped with a point. Nothing about this game stood out to me. I actually did watch a lot of this one, and Magnus Eriksson still looks really good for San Jose, and it looks to be a very good signing for them. Houston had some of the speed that we've seen from them, but overall this game kind of felt like it was always going to end in a draw, and it did.
There was the... Now, I didn't get a chance to see these highlights, but people were talking up the Atlanta-New York City draw.
Yes. In the more exciting realm of draws, and another game with an awful lot of whistles going on and an awful lot of things called and not called, this one was an interesting match. Greg Garza actually opened up the scoring for Atlanta. And this was interesting because in a team like Atlanta, we're used to hearing and seeing certain names that are going to be your... you know, Martinez and your Almirons, et cetera, that are really going to be turning the screws. But it's Greg Garza who gets the opening goal. And Chris McCann, who brings it back level again after David Villa, of course, does what he does and sinks a penalty. But the highlight of this game, if you haven't seen it, is the absolute screamer of a goal from Alex Ring from New York City to tie the game. Both teams at times looked to be sort of overtaking the balance that sort of canceled each other out. There'd be long stretches where Atlanta really looked on the back foot, traded with long stretches where New York looked on the back foot. But the goal from Alex Ring was absolutely sensational and sort of put an exclamation mark on it. And that's my goal of the week, is Alex Ring's blast from outside the box.
And that's another player who you would look at... That's another player who you would look at as, I think, as somebody that you don't expect to hear that much out of New York.
Absolutely. And that's where I think New York City FC really, you know, their strength lies in having somebody like David Villa on their team. But having this kind of like, yeah, this midfielder from Finland who's kind of not super notable, come in and contribute like that. New York City has a really, really good squad, and they've shown that time and time again, even when they've been without David Villa. This was further proof that, you know, they're playing away at a high-flying Atlanta and dealt with them quite well, dealt with them as good as most teams have dealt with them this season. I feel like Vieira's probably a little unhappy that they weren't a way to actually come away with 3 points, because there were definitely moments in this match where it looked like it could go that way.
Between that and between him and Magnus Eriksson, I feel like signing players out of the fairly decent Swedish and Finnish first leagues has gone out of vogue somewhat.
Yeah, they have. Certainly in MLS. Yeah, you're right. The trend has kind of shifted away to South America.
But certainly good pickups.
Absolutely. And the last match we have to talk about is another draw. I think we've been spoiled in previous weeks by a lot of 4-0s and 5-0s and 3-2s and 4-5s and whatnot. Is Sporting KC go to Seattle, and another game where just swapped goals back and forth, relatively early penalty. Ile scores it. Will Bruin had a chance shortly after that he missed, and then came in and finally he got off the mark and scored a great goal to make it 1-1. Christian Roldan, another player that we've not seen much of, or we'd expect to hear more of early on in the season, came in and was able to make it 2-1. And shortly after that, Graham Zusi came in and just stole the show and went on a long run and just was able to very, very calmly slot it away and get an important road point for them. The thing I'd say that I take away from this game is just Seattle, again, much like Portland, sort of looking a little bit more like we'd expect to see them. And Sporting Kansas City is best in the league right now, or best in the West, and a very difficult opponent to play. And considering how poorly Seattle's played, I thought this was a good result for them to get some of their confidence back, get some of their goal scorers back on the board. They'll be disappointed it's just a point, but overall, I think a pretty decent result and something they'll be quite happy to build on.
Not a lot of people go into Kansas City and come out with 2 goals.
No, indeed. Well, and for that part, not a lot of people go into Seattle and get 2 goals. So, it's a good match all around.
I've critiqued the formation at times that has Will Bruin right up front, so it's nice to see that there was some success with that.
It can work. Who is your player of the week? Or your team of the week this week, Andrew?
My team of the week, I think if you're... let me just look at the... Give me 1 second to look at the results here. I think I got to say... I was going to joke that my goal of the week was Bradley Wright Phillips' first goal in the Montreal game. It sounded great. It sounded really good.
Couldn't see it, but it sure sounded good.
Thwack. Sounded wonderful.
Yeah,
you could hear there was it made a great noise. I think my team of the week it's got to be the Red Bulls, because there's in a sand shifting East that you can't even really judge the East right now until Toronto arrives to the season.
Yeah.
In a shifting sands East, they're not even the greatest table position. But I think, you know, they've also had some of those issues where they have the focus difference because of their CONCACAF Champions League run. I think that they could do something good if they can improve their away form.
I am going to be deeply unpopular and say that my team of the week is Portland Timbers. Not just because they finally won a game. And this is a close one, and I don't want to over-favor goalkeepers as my players of the week. But Jake Gleason made an absolutely outstanding save where, like, it's a hard, low shot from close range. And I've never seen somebody that big drop that quickly before and get a hand to it. And this was one of many that, you know, there's been a lot of criticism thrown at Jake Gleason early on in the season. Some of it from me. This game, I was just like, okay, I'll shut up. Like, he had an absolutely outstanding performance. But for me, my player of the week is Steve Clark for DC United.
Yep.
I truly a performance that absolutely kept them in this game. And as much as the early goal helped, Steve Clark, I feel like, is the one that really brought home the 3 points for them by keeping the ball out of the net numerous times.
There were some off-field machinations that went on this week, both with MLS and the Canadian Premier League. The FC Cincinnati was in the midst of getting their stadium deal approved by their local city council, scaring the crap out of everybody when a city staffer referred to the eventual Cincinnati team as Fußball Club Cincinnati. Which is, Dwayne Rollins noted on Twitter, would beat Real Salt Lake's record for worst team name.
Certainly would.
The FC Cincinnati is great. Don't fuck with it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Don't. I know people, there are some people that are defensive of it. I saw them on Twitter too. Still a bad idea. Now there was an owner's meeting. There was an owner's meeting, I think, yesterday or the day before. So that would be Tuesday. What even day of the week is it? They met on Tuesday. A lot of people were curious as to whether or not that was going to result in the official awarding of a franchise to Cincinnati after they got the stadium deal from the ownership.
Mm-hmm.
The owners are still waiting to see.
So, some
which
news.
Perhaps indicates to me, it may not, I'm looking at this, an article in Soccer Stadium Digest that says that it may not be bad news for Cincinnati fans. I wonder if they're still waiting to hear from Sacramento. I'm just seeing how the situation goes.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's maybe good news for Columbus fans.
Yeah. Well, and
I don't know
at a certain point, you've got to ask. I don't
know if it's a one or the other one there, but.
Yeah, how long do you wait to find out, though, when you've got good clubs with good structures and good ownership set up and waiting? You know, like, how long can you wait to hold out while you've got people knocking at the door ready to go? And for.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Precourt and company in Columbus trying to move the club.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not able to do something soon, I think Don Garber and his ilk have some tough decisions to make about, well, you know, are you going to wait forever for this guy, or are you going to allow a club who's ready to go in?
The specific quote was, The Board of Governors, quote, viewed the recent Cincinnati Council vote on the West End Stadium as a positive step forward. While there was no plan for a formal expansion vote at today's meeting, the league will continue discussions with the three finalists.
Hmm.
That's actually a paraphrase. I could some words up, but it's basically it.
All right.
In Canadian Premier League news, we had a bunch of team names trademarked.
Oh, yeah.
Which included Calgary FC, HWFC, York 9 FC, Calvary FC, Port City FC, and Founders FC.
Well, a lot of those are real bad. what is so wrong? Like, can people just not put the name of the town or the city and FC after it? Good work, Calgary. Keep
York
it simple.
9, York, the one that's closest to being, like, obvious is York 9, which, as Waking the Red notes, is going to refer to the 9 municipalities in York Region.
But, like, who knows that or cares?
Well, you see,
I guess, right?
There's 9 historical fountains that dot the city limits, and so 9, that's why. Like, call me cynical, but...
I mean, just because something people has a reason doesn't mean it needs a name.
People, the other ones, people, according to this article, are less sure about. HWF, nobody, there's been no clarification on whether or not the Halifax team will be called the Wanderers. That might be tough for the supporters group because they got a name already. They have one. People wonder if Cavalry could be Calgary because of the horses thing.
Right.
Founders FC people, according to this Waking the Red article, may refer to Charlottetown, PEI, because it was the. But I think it's high time for Fiatl to get a team. I think it's time. I think we really need to have the Fiatl Founders in this league.
Oh, good. You've been sitting on that one for the whole hour, haven't you? I'm so pleased with yourself right now. That's good, though.
People don't know if Port City refers to Halifax, Hamilton, or Victoria. I know that there's one port city in Canada, and it is St. John, New Brunswick.
Yeah.
In which I currently reside. I have heard zero noise about any possible CPL team, so it's almost certainly not that, but I can dream.
You can dream. Get those cleats dusted off, buddy.
And the other news is that Edmonton is trying to become the primary tenant of Clark Stadium for a CPL run, but high school football is mad about that, so there's a little push and pull going on at the city council level there.
Damn. Just can't sort that one out. Well, that was a big week of some results and some non-results. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. You can find this podcast at thatssomls.com on iTunes and other places where podcasts can be found.
Yeah, subscribe, rate it. If you rate it, then we climb up the charts and we can do battle with other podcasts. That's how that works.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We got to make the podcast playoffs this year.
At least the final six, you know, like come on, just above the cutoff line. We will not be relegated.
Yes.
Okay.
Where can we find you online?
Oh, yeah, me. Right. I'm usually tweeting about whatever game I'm most aggravated by any given week at That's So MLS on Twitter. Also, if you want us to talk about something on the podcast, you can hit me up there and offer suggestions, and we'll try to chat about it on the show.
Wonderful. In the meantime, in between time, I think that belongs to somebody else. I can't say that. In the meantime, Nick, don't get sent off.
I will do my very best. Beautiful.
Nice.